Warwick Gard's a partner at Ernst & Young. He's worked in the insurance industry for 27 years, almost as long as Will. Warwick's been an appointed actuary to a number of general and health insurers, and he's got a long history advising insurers and the insurance industry on risk and capital management. He's been at the helm of several LAGIC-related projects, including assisting boards review and refine risk appetite statements using choice modelling. I believe that's a New Zealand form of modelling. Development of future state vision and developing work plans to help insurers manage the regulatory change. Would you please welcome Warwick Gard?
Thanks, Scott. Like Gloria yesterday, you did emphasise the word long. It's not that long. I am pretty young and I'm still full of energy about this job. And did someone get the names of the people that left after Will spoke? I want to go and see them personally. As Scott said before, this presentation is to support the paper that the working group has put together, and it has been a team effort. All the people up on the screen there have put a significant amount of work into this paper, so while I'm standing up here and going through the slides, it's all these guys' fault as well. So thanks to Scott, who was part of the working party, Case, who I can see down there, Richard and Andy. Also thanks Dr. Will. I'll definitely be reading your CAT Model 101. And I think one of the things to point out is, like with the natural perils accumulation, there's a lot of technical work, there's a lot of modelling, lots of uncertainty that's hidden behind that precision and the statistical distributions. With the other accumulations, we basically don't have any of that. Where Will said you've got to make sure that when you use those models, you then apply common sense. With other accumulations, you start with common sense and you finish with common sense. So you just need to keep that in mind. So we'll try and I'll have a go at using this device, Will. Yes. So I won't go through any of this, but in the paper there's a bit about the background as to why this is necessary, and Scott spoke a little bit about that. The two points at the bottom probably are worth a quick discussion. The guidance is all around coming up with the vertical requirement associated from a common dependent source. A common dependent source is really left to the judgment of the insurer as to what that means, and I guess their advisors and ultimately the board. Within the working party, we've had quite a discussion around what sort of events and how long the events might be and what might be the interactions to justify the definition of a common dependent source. But that's something that each one of you who gets involved in this will have to decide, but it is an important issue. And I guess the other thing really is I put up my hand to be associated with this working party because I thought it would be easy and get some kudos out of being involved in a working party. I put up my hand so I could get the bottle of wine at the end. But really, working through it with my colleagues on the working party, I really discovered just how difficult this is going to be in practice. It is not going to be a trivial exercise. It's not going to be easy to explain to executive management and the boards what you've actually done and what it means. So it really is going to take a concerted effort from the people involved. As Scott also mentioned at the start, look, we see the paper as a first step in stimulating the discussion. As I said, we found it very difficult. We realised that while we put up our hands to do this, we're probably not the only experts in the room, so to speak. So we're after a discussion in the profession. We're after feedback. We hope to refine our paper, and as Scott said, perhaps that'll eventuate into an information note that will be useful to everyone. And finally, apologies for the fact that the paper isn't up on the website already. Because it was so difficult, we haven't quite got there yet, but it'll be there soon. This is a slide to show everyone that I can use Google and paste pictures onto a PowerPoint slide, the same as everyone else. But it also gives an indication that there's a wide range of potential events that could be defined a common dependent source that might result in another accumulations vertical requirement. And, you know, we've got asbestos representing latent claims, and we'll talk about a bit more about that later. That's a photo of the Spanish flu epidemic of, I think it was 1918. Unemployment and economic conditions, that's a big debatable common dependent source that you'll have to come to grips with. Terrorism, chemical factory explosion, marine disasters. I didn't have room to fit in the aeroplane crashes, but you could get that as well. A train crash. I thought that was really good because it went through a building in a car park and everything. It looked quite neat. But these all came to me as being the fairly obvious ones. And I think with the other accumulations, you also have to think really carefully about the portfolio that you have. And there's likely to be very many not obvious scenarios that don't sort of fit the mould of the things on this slide that might be relevant to your insurance company. And I think that's something that's really important to keep in mind. I was thinking about an insurer that I'm involved with that has this strange consumer credit type product that if a new iPhone comes out, they might end up having a whole lot of payments because people will accidentally drop their old iPhone into water and have to have it replaced from the accidental damage coverage. That might be their other accumulations vertical requirement, I don't know. But you have to sort of think about the portfolio that you're involved with and what makes sense for that. In the paper, we sort of provide an outline of a methodology. These are the points that we've tried to provide some guidance on and the steps we suggest that people involved in this process should be following. I guess we've primarily focused the paper at members of the Institute, but anyone really can follow this process and come up with a view on the other accumulations vertical requirement. So obviously design the approach, collect the data, engage with stakeholders. We think that's really important both from an input and an output perspective. You need to utilise the smarts in the building, so to speak, but also you need to keep people up to date with where you're at. Identify the scenarios, quantify the scenarios, challenge and validate, document, some sort of approval process, and then finally monitor and update, because we feel this will be a continual thing. We will get better at this over the first few years and hopefully beyond that as well. So quickly, just to step through some of the highlights of that methodology. As Will indicated, I'm not going to do a whole presentation of it. Just enough to say that when it gets up on the website, you'll all want to read it. Estelle, pay attention, please. Thank you. So basically, the approach we're suggesting revolves around a scenario loss table. And we sort of give a description of what we think it might look like and how you might use it. But what we think we're trying to come up with is a series of scenarios that are defined by a taxonomy that you would invent and explain to your company so they fully understand it. A description of the event. A probability of how likely this event might occur. And that probability might be deterministic or it might be stochastic. We'd leave that up to you, but again, an expression of the probability of the event. Then also an expression of the gross impact. We've discussed putting the difficulties associated with putting a stochastic distribution up for the gross impact, and feel that that would be really, really difficult given the uncertainties of the perils that the other accumulations is associated with. But it might be that for the one scenario, you have one or two different levels of that scenario that you could use. Then you need to take into account the reinsurance recoveries, the premium liability offset or adjustment, the reinstatement costs that might be associated with reinstating the cover, and then the net impact. And we go through in the paper some of the ways we feel that you could express this information and how useful it might be. Then the next slide demonstrates another skill that I have, is that I can go into the PowerPoint shapes box and put nice shapes onto a slide. And these shapes sort of are there to demonstrate that there's a whole lot of potential data sources up the top. I can use it, Will, up here. So across the top is just a whole lot of data sources that we expect would be useful in doing this exercise. And then a whole lot of people or organisations to talk to. So a whole range of stakeholders, both internal and external, that can provide you with good information that you can then synthesise and apply your judgement to come up with some scenarios. Certainly, again, the internal groups, underwriters, product managers, claims managers, reinsurance managers, in their day-to-day jobs, they're considering these sorts of scenarios. They might not be doing it for the same purpose or holistically as a group, but it would be silly to ignore the skills and experience that they'd have. Reinsurance and reinsurance brokers, giving a plug for Swiss Re, they have some excellent information on their website and their Sigma publication, as do the other reinsurers, and you can certainly talk to your reinsurance brokers as well. A wealth of information around not just natural perils, but all sorts of incidents. And there's a nice series on liability and professional indemnity as well. I think that the risk managers in the current framework, and I guess the new ICAP framework, with the risk management, we have risk managers that are looking at scenarios that are impacting the company. Now, they might not all be insurance scenarios, but there's some thought that's already gone into some of these things, so it'd be worthwhile talking to them. And finally, the executive management and the board. I know from the ICAP side of things, boards have taken a great interest in understanding the scenarios and maybe suggesting other scenarios that you should think about. I think they'll have also a great interest in these scenarios. And also, they're going to require explanation of the results. And I think having that level of engagement where it makes it easy to explain to the boards the results you've got through what process and what level of uncertainty is associated with that end result, to put them in a position where they can take responsibility for what level of cover they're going to purchase in reinsurance, what level of risk charge you're going to have if your appropriate risk charge is the other accumulation's vertical requirement. I think it will be key to keep them informed on the journey. So again, there's a whole section around identifying the scenarios. The two ones at the bottom I think are worthy of, again, discussion. Latent risks was one that we struggled with in terms of, are you trying to allow for latent risks that are occurring in the next 12 months and might not hit your balance sheet for 20 or 30 years when someone suddenly decides that mobile phones are killing us all or something of that nature, or the nanotechnology in our sunscreen is making us all crazy or giving us cancer? That seemed like a really big ask and maybe not very useful. It might be considered more useful to think about what might be raised in the next 12 months, what from the past might come up and affect your balance sheet in the next 12 months, or what level of deterioration might hit your P&L in the next 12 months might be a more useful way of thinking about latent risks. And then the other one was economic scenarios. Clearly for, say, a trade creditor or a consumer credit insurer, or even the prescribed scenario for the LMI insurer, the impact on their capital position generally arises from a recessionary event, an economic event. And we understand that that's what APRA's trying to get those sorts of insurers to capture in the other accumulations vertical requirement for trade credit and CCI. But what about the impact of a super inflationary period on a public liability and CTP portfolio? The way you have your reinsurance, that might not cover the claims cost of that, and that might end up being the biggest impact on your bottom line. But then you have the liability insurance risk charge and the asset risk charge that has inflationary components in there. So you don't want to double count, but you also want to make sure that you have enough capital for the correct scenario for you. So again, it's up to the people working on this within the companies and the insurers to think about this, and I guess many people in this room advising those insurers as to whether that should be considered as a other accumulations vertical requirement or whether it's adequately covered in the insurance risk charge or the asset risk charge. That's good. We've almost run out of time, so I don't have to spend too much time on quantification, which really does my head in, because some of these things are really, really difficult. We don't have models that pretend to estimate the number, and as Will said, they could be out by 100% either way. We just know we don't have anything, so we've got to have a really educated guess at the end of the day. And using the collective wisdom of the experts in the room, and you know, when Scott mentioned the New Zealand modelling called choice modelling, that could actually be a methodology that could be used to collect that collective wisdom. Governance is really important, and there's a section around challenging, reviewing and validating, documenting and communicating, approval and monitoring. We expect for many companies this won't be your ICRC number. It might be for many, but for many it won't. And developing rules of thumb to keep a track of that to let you know that, look, we've done a quick calculation, it's all right, I'll focus all my attentions over here on the natural perils, is really important. And there's a bit of discussion around how you might go about that. This is a slide that I've inserted in the incorrect place in the presentation. But this was to demonstrate that I could put a Microsoft Excel graph onto a PowerPoint slide. And it was really to just have a very quick, and I guess because time's up, it will be a quick, about the premium liability offset. And this is not going to be an easy thing to do either. And it will depend on how you go about doing the vertical requirement. In, say, consumer credit, generally the way it's gone about is we have a recessionary event, and this impacts claims, and the total claims will end up being X. Well, obviously, that total claims, we've allowed for all of that in our premium liability in a 75% situation. Premium liabilities might go for 7 years, given that they're long-term policies, and your event might only go for 2 or 3 years, the impact. So for that case, you might say, okay, well, the premium liabilities that are run off over the same period of time will be what I use as my premium liability offset. But it's a lot harder when you think if your event is a plane crashes into Sydney Airport, kills a lot of people, destroys the plane, and the airport's out of action for the next 6 months. Now, you probably estimate the impact of that as a one-off event, and then to say that that's included in your 75% premium liability might be a bit hard to actually claim. I could see how you could say, for the central estimate, being the mean of the distribution, the probability times the severity should be in that mean. But at the 75% level, well, I've estimated that as 99.5, so it probably isn't in there. But that's something that you'll each have to consider and to say, well, really, the way I've worked out my vertical requirement, am I able to take some credit for what's in my premium liabilities? We've talked about all of that, so thanks for listening, and you probably can go now.
Please thank Warwick.
Please read the paper when it gets up there at the end of the week. Thanks.
If anyone wants to ask any questions, I'm happy to stay.
Yes, Tim. Yes. Yeah, I think, again, where we got to was this is a risk to our balance sheet from another accumulations point of view, and therefore the risk to our balance sheet will materialise in the next 12 months due to latent claims that we recognise as being latent claims in that period. So it's a different concept to other. But that was our view. I don't think we came to the view that other people might have a different view, and that was one of the areas we were looking for feedback. But to us, the usefulness of thinking about what might we be covering in the next year that might impact us in the next 40 years' time that we might need to hold capital for today was a really, really obtuse thought pattern. It really was difficult to work out then what are we going to do. It's that unknown unknowns at the far end of the spectrum. But each company might be impacted by something that could hit their balance sheet next year that might arise in that next year about, well, we've just discovered this or that actually does impact you, or that this pollution problem or this asbestos problem is a lot worse off than we thought, and we've had a big impact on our balance sheet in the next year. We thought that boards should be thinking about that and putting capital aside for that.
All right, thanks. We might have to cut it short. I think we're getting booted out of here. Would you join me in thanking Will and Warwick?